If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, I'm Carol Gold, and welcome to Above the Fray. Our number here is 914-803-4522, and we welcome your calls during the next half hour of the show. Steve Clark, my co-host, is on a business trip this week, and so these two episodes of The Fray will be just me this week, and I hope just isn't to minimize my input. Steve will be back with us again next Monday evening. I'd like to talk about violence in America, and I'd like to talk about it because it's on everybody's mind. We have it both in terms of the issue of gun control or not gun control following the latest shooting in Oregon this past week. We have it at our borders. We have it outside of our borders, beyond violence in America. We also have it in the Middle East. We have terrible slaughtering of Christians. The most recent 12, I believe, Christians slaughtered in the last couple of days by ISIS, beheaded for refusal to convert to Christianity. And so let me start at home first, because actually, violence, I think, in the end, no matter where it rears its ugly head, has fundamentally the same origins. And when I think about the gun control argument, which, by the way, every time it comes up, we sort of know what both sides have to contribute to the conversation. When I think about that argument, and without saying where I come down on it, let me just say that I don't think guns are the problem. And I say that because the analogy that came to mind recently to me is, if someone had cancer, and they had cancer that had metastasized in their body, and they had it in their liver, and they had it in their lung, and they also had some melanoma on their face, I liken the gun control issue of, if we can stop the guns, we can stop the violence, I liken that to putting a Band-Aid on the melanoma on someone's nose when underneath it all, their liver and their lungs are metastasized. So why do I say that? I say that because I think to give you another analogy, and they don't exactly coincide beautifully together, but on a train track that has six or seven stops along the way, to me, the last stop are the guns. And the first stop is the culture, and in particular, a culture that breeds violence. And I think we've done that in multiple ways. So when I say violence, I'm not automatically, and please don't think I'm going to Hollywood or the media or even, you know, interactive video games or anything else. When I talk about the culture, there are several aspects of the culture, of our culture, of the way we live in the West, particularly in the United States, that feeds, nourishes, provides a breeding ground for violence. Because violence really is about anger and frustration. And it's not about a healthy frustration and a healthy anger, if there is such a thing. And I think there is such a thing as what's called blessed anger, and I'll get to that in a minute. But if there is such, the anger that I'm talking about is anger that comes from, anger that is misplaced, improperly vented, and, by the way, encouraged by the culture. So I think the technology, in a way, has created a lot of anger. How do I mean that? Well, I think that when you have to deal with circumstances that are beyond your control, that make you operate at a speed that is so antagonistic to your nature or to nature in general, I think it's easy to see frustration mounting. We all are moved and accelerated and frustrated by the rate at which the technology has changed our lives and our efforts to keep up with those changes. When we talk about you know, two income families, that's almost history. Not just because half, you know, 95 million people are out of work, but because two incomes don't even do it anymore for many families. People have to have three and four sources of income, and people hold two and three jobs in order to just get by. That takes its toll. Initially, it takes its toll on your physical self, and then it takes a toll on your mental and emotional self. And then when you're unable to get out of that vicious cycle of running as fast as you can to just try to keep up, then that frustration, which may not have a healthy venting system, that frustration becomes anger. And so I think, number one, we have a lot of people in this country who are angry because they have been forced for years now, in some cases a decade or more, to live a life that is not the life they really want to live. And that's not, this is not the Nancy Pelosi solution of we have to pass Obamacare so that artists have more free time to draw. I'm not talking about the life we'd like to live in our fantasy worlds or in our projected imaginations where we would all like a certain amount of leisure. I'm talking about lives we'd like to live that are just more civil, that are just more balanced, that are just more human friendly than the lives that we've been living. Reminding you here that the number is 914-803-4522, and welcome to call in and jump in on this conversation. And so, where I was is that anger, when it's not allowed to vent, stews. It stews and it grows. And the reason that I know that that's true is because while people have different styles of anger, inevitably, the end result, when anger is not mitigated, when anger or frustration are not addressed in their early stages, I've seen examples with different kinds of anger all winding up with bad ends. And so personally, let me share a story of what I'm talking about. And it's very personal. When I was married, I tended to have what my parents used to say was a very short fuse when I was growing up. And I didn't deal very well with that as I came into young adulthood. And when I got married, I was capable of getting angry. When I get angry, I get loud, and I sometimes would say things that were unkind. Out of anger, out of hurt, out of frustration, out of whatever, all of those were present in my marriage. So I was someone who acted out their anger. When I got angry, I didn't keep it in. I let it out, but I let it out inappropriately. I let it out too loud. I let it out too long sometimes, and I let it out with words that I regretted after I spoke them. My then husband never got angry. He never got angry. He was always even-tempered, and he knew how to walk away, walk out of a room, whatever, when things were escalating. However, everyone feels frustration, and everyone feels anger at some point, and it's what's actually called blessed anger, and you have to let that out in a healthy way. Well, while my anger was episodic, and I could let it out when I needed to, even if it was inappropriately let out, at least it was timely, shall we say, my ex-husband's anger, when it peaked, became a form of violence. I'm not saying he ever was violent against me. The show is not about being personal tonight, nor do I ever want to embarrass someone. All I'm saying is that when there's no healthy and timely and appropriate outlet for frustration and anger, it manifests itself in very twisted ways. So I started with the example of what the technology has done. Now let's look at what the technology has done, not just in terms of pace, but in terms of content. Where you used to have to go to the movies 30 years ago, or 25 years ago, or 20 years ago, where you used to have to go to the movies to see a violent movie, or you had a certain amount of violence in movies and in television programs, but it was a fraction of what the overall menu was for what you could see at a movie or what you could watch on television. That stopped being true in the last decade or in the last 15 years. What is true now is that violence is everywhere. Violence is easily accessible online. It's accessible in interactive games. It's accessible in magazines, in books. We have, you know, vampire movies and vampire books that young people just love to read. These kids, these young people, the last generation, has been raised on not only the speed of the technology, but the proliferation of violence on the technology and through the technology. And so you combine that with social media and social media's tendency to make everyone want to be the famous one, want to be a star, want to have their thing go viral, whatever that thing is. And you have an awful lot of people in a generation that are frustrated because they're impatient. They were raised in a very fast-moving society, in a very rapid change of venue and change of subject matter through the internet. And this same generation was raised on a lot of violence. And so now you combine that with the tendency of social media to make everybody want to be glamorous or be famous or be out there or be viral or have their reality, whatever it is, show, podcast, I don't even know. The possibilities are infinite. You now have another pool of potentially angry people. Yes, you have access to weapons in this country. Yes, you can buy guns. But I own a gun. I know many people who are gun owners who have never used it for any harmful reason, who use it as a sport and not to hunt animals either. I've never killed anything with a gun. I shoot at a range. I shoot inanimate targets. I do it for hand-eye coordination. I do it because I learned another skill in my life. I did it because it's an accuracy thing. It's a competitive thing. It's me against the bullseye, so to speak. And there are a lot of people who have guns that will never commit violence. The problem isn't the gun. The problem is a culture that breeds violence. And I think we have become a culture that not only breeds it, but we acquiesce to it or we become apathetic to it. I think the fact that the videos that were released, the undercover videos that were released by Planned Parenthood, of Planned Parenthood, the violence against those unborn babies, the fact that those videos could be out there, could be accessible, that people have seen them, that we're having congressional hearings about them, and there isn't this incredible outcry of murder. If you don't think it's a baby before the third trimester, there's certainly enough abortion going on in the third trimester that even if you had somehow the rationale that it wasn't life in the first trimester and it wasn't life in the second trimester, it was still a fetus, by the third trimester, you're looking at a fully formed baby. No matter what way you look at it, you're looking at a fully formed baby. To harvest that for its parts, to sell it for its parts, to sell him or her for its parts, to take those parts violently and without concern for inflicting pain, and for us to know that that exists and to go on our merry way and continue to fund it in the most recent resolution from Congress, with millions of taxpayer dollars, there's something wrong with us. We have been hardened. We have been conditioned. We have slowly been taken down the road of not only being manipulated, but being hard-hearted. So I was thinking about all this week, and I was thinking about the upcoming election and how many websites and how many headlines are about, whether it's Donald Trump or it's Hillary Clinton or it's Bernie Sanders or it's Ted Cruz or it's Marco Rubio or it's Ben Carson, whatever it is, right? Whoever the candidate is, I was thinking to myself, it's these politicians, and I'm going to put them all in the category of politicians, because even if they're new to the process, they'll be politicians shortly once they're in Washington. That all of these politicians are who have taken this country in the direction it has gone in, for probably the last, I would say, 40 years. And so how in the world can they possibly be the solution? And are we willing to delude ourselves that any one piece of legislation, whether it's gun control or any particular elected official, be they the mayor, the governor, or the president of the United States, really has an ability at this advanced stage of our culture's evolution, the path that it's been going in, to make the significant change that has to be made? It's too big for any one person, and it's too big for any one piece of legislation because it's too endemic. It's like the metastasized cancer. The anger, the frustration is like metastasized cancer. It has spread. It's deep and it's broad. And it's going to take the equivalent of chemotherapy to the nation. So what does that mean? What does that mean and what does that look like? Well, first of all, I'd like to say that there is a definition of blessed anger. And the best example I can give you is if a lion lays down, or let's take a cheetah. If a cheetah lays down in the jungle to rest, in its natural instinct to survive, that cheetah will map out in its mind or in its through its instinctive mechanisms the minimum amount of space that it needs to survive. So let's make believe that in its mind, again, make believe, it maps out a 3-foot radius, that it needs 3 feet around itself in every direction in order to be safe. That with a 3-foot radius, it can take care of itself no matter what will happen. And let's say a lion is walking toward that cheetah. That cheetah will allow that lion to walk as close as 3 feet and 1 inch. But the minute that lion crosses the 3-foot mark, that cheetah will tear its throat out. Why? Because it's called blessed anger. Blessed anger is the minimum amount of space you need to survive. We live in a world, we live in a culture. Well, if you heard that, an entire, what would we call that? An entire dish, an entire tray just fell off my glass desk and shattered, and I'm going to keep going. The minimum amount of space, we live in a culture, we live in a society where none of us map out the minimum amount of space that we need to survive. And so we all push ourselves to the point of mental, physical, and emotional exhaustion due to all the things I spoke about earlier, the least of which is not the technology, right? So we're already strung out as far as we can go. To think that a politician or a piece of legislation is going to make the difference in all of this is fiction. It's illusion. And it's kidding ourselves one more time that just the first black president or the first female president or the first whatever president will turn this around. This has to get turned around the same way it got turned wrong. And that's by each of us in our own lives, in our own jobs, in our own daily interactions, in our own families, within our own minds, within our own hearts, ultimately. Why do I say that? I say that because there are people who were in Hollywood making films. There were people who were in social media. There were people who were in the software for interactive video games. There were people who were in television. There were congressmen and senators who were in political positions of power. And one by one, in all of those occupations and professions, including lawyers, including judges, including doctors, one by one, they fell like bowling pins. One by one, they neglected to stand for what is humane, for what is just, for what is lawful, for what is ethical. And one by one, the culture fell to where we are now. And the only way you reverse that is the way it got there. One by one, we have to turn around in our own lives, in our own families, in our own communities, in our own towns and cities, in our own voting, in our own purchasing, in everything we say and do. We have to turn it around. It isn't true that one person cannot make a difference. One person may or may not make a difference on any given day, but collectively, one person makes a huge difference. And if you don't think that's true, then you don't understand what socialism and communism have always sought to do. They have sought to gather enough people into a specific situation in order to turn them around, so to speak, in order to make them compliant, in order to make them not think for themselves. And the greatest, truly, the greatest experiment in freedom at the human level has been the United States of America. And nowhere was it written that that experiment had to succeed. We are babies in the world of human history. We are babies in the world of global history, and we are babies in the world of modern history, leaving out ancient history. We're a few hundred years old, right? A few hundred years plus. Rome is 5,000, there's 5,000 years worth of history and more in the Middle East. And so nothing says we get to survive. We'll get to survive if we get it right. We'll get to survive if we figure out where we've done it wrong. And I would say this: not everyone can be Mother Teresa or Jesus or Mahatma Gandhi. But what each of us can do is realize that you may control nothing other than your own self, your thoughts, your words, your deeds, your heart. You actually do control one more thing. You control the fate of your soul. And if the external world has become so corrupted that you feel disempowered or impotent in relationship to it or victimized, what you have control over is something that is far more long-lasting than your physical body or your material circumstances external to you, meaning your possessions and the physical world we live in. You have control over what happens to you when you leave this body. And the one thing that I think you can know for certain, because all of the great teachers have tried to teach it in one way or another, is that the greatest form or expression of your understanding of life is service to others. Because when you finally awaken to the realization that the concept of oneness, of unity, is not a political concept, it's a spiritual concept. There's only one of us. We're all connected in consciousness. We're all connected on a soul level. And that connection has a vibratory aspect to it because, as you know, in the beginning, right, was the word. And I'm not a Christian, I'm a Jew. But it's all about energy and frequency and sound, light and color. Light, color, and sound. Or light and sound, to keep it simple. And so when you vibrate and you're all connected, it's like a string in a stringed instrument. It's like a single string. And when they are vibrating harmoniously, something beautiful comes out. And when there's nothing but dissonance and discordance, what comes out is unbearable to the ear. Well, we can make life bearable or unbearable by how harmonious we are. And the way that humans become harmonious is by understanding that we're all connected. And if we're all connected, and I believe we are, then what we do to one another matters a great deal, because that vibration, that frequency and that vibration ripples out just like a stone thrown into a pond. And so when you are unkind to someone, it isn't just that person that you affect. You affect everyone that person interacts with that day, because that person takes that negative energy and they pass it on. And if they don't, then it accumulates within them. And that isn't healthy either. The way that you turn things around is to keep in mind every day, by everything you think, everything you say, everything you do, that we're all connected. And what you do matters. It's why the expression, when a butterfly flaps its wings in Texas, wind patterns change in Japan. You may not see them change. It may not happen instantly, but it's inevitable, because everything touches and everything vibrates to that which it's next to. And that goes on and on and on. And the frequency at which things vibrate varies. Humans vibrate at a specific frequency, and all their bodily organs vibrate at specific frequencies. Your heart talks to someone else just like it's on FM and both are tuned into the same station. All matter vibrates at a frequency. And if we understand why it's important to tune the instrument, us, so that we are emitting a sound that creates harmony and not dissonance, that can find other emanations from other similar sources that are vibrating at the same frequency. That frequency that you want to vibrate at is love. And love wants to serve, and love wants to give. And that's why I say the greatest way out of this is to understand our connection to one another, not in a political sense, not in what Bernie Sanders is selling, and not in what anyone else is selling as a single solitary solution. It really is up to you, and it really is up to me. And it's why I did the whole show tonight on this, and I hope I didn't get to it too late in the show. I spent the first half of it on violence and gun control, and I know I was rushing through it, but I did it because I felt that if I send this message out, there will be hearts that it touches, and those hearts will then become activated. And those activated hearts can find other activated hearts. We talk about of like mind. Let's try to be of like heart and start very local in our own lives, even more local than that, in our own thoughts and in our own hearts, to, as Gandhi said, be the change you wish to see in the world. Thanks for listening. I'm Carol Gold. I'll be back here again Thursday night. And Steve will rejoin me next Monday. Steve Clark, my co-host, he'll be back from his business trip. We thank you for listening. We ask you to follow us on Blog Talk Radio, follow us on Twitter, like us on our Facebook page. I'm Carol Gold. Have a wonderful week, everyone. Peace, truly peace in your heart and in your mind. That's the answer.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.